What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Josh Larson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Not our normal full show. You will get that this week as we talk about James Gray's The Lost City of Z and the top five movie expeditions we'd sign up for. We've already recorded this, and it was a really fun show. And hopefully that translated to the audio and you have fun with it as well. We're going to have fun, though, here as well, talking about Agnes Varda, the fifth film in our Varda marathon. Again, we're jumping ahead at least another decade, if not
Sounds
more.
Right, yep.
I think the last film we talked about, Vagabond, was from the 80s, mid-80s, and here we are now in 2000, and our first documentary, The Gleaners and I, a film inspired by a painting, and it's a movie about people who are part of this tradition in France that I was completely unaware of that involves scavenging, really, for leftover items, whether it's in a vineyard or it's a potato crop, whatever the case might be, and Varda gets into lots of different offshoots of that. It could be junk, refrigerators, TVs that are left on streets for people to come and pick through. So we're going to talk about that here in a moment. We, of course, want to highlight that this marathon is brought to you by our friends at Mubi, a curated online cinema that brings its members a handpicked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films.
So this is how Mubi works. Every day, curators introduce a new title, and then you have 30 days to watch it. So that means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, and you get that for $4.99 a month. Plus, when you use Mubi's mobile apps, you can download the films to watch them offline. Now, listeners of Film Spotting can try Mubi free for a month. Just go to Mubi.com/filmspotting. That's Mubi.com/filmspotting. That way you can redeem the special offer now.
And some content, they are currently showcasing the Locarno Festival in Los Angeles. They have another ongoing series, It's About Time, the cinema of Lav Diaz and Agnes Varda's couplets, because of course we did sync this marathon focusing on Agnes Varda with Mubi. A couple of the films we talked about in the series, including One Sings, The Other Doesn't, were available exclusively via Mubi, and they are highlighting some of her other films. So if you have been encouraged by the movies of this marathon and our discussions, as we certainly have, hopefully you have had an opportunity to take advantage of that offer from Mubi and seek out some of Varda's other films. The Gleaners and I, Josh, we set up a little bit what the film's about. As I said, the first documentary, also the first film, I think I'm confident in saying, where Agnes Varda is a character in the movie. We not only hear her behind the camera interacting with her subjects, asking them questions, but we also see her on screen in a variety of playful ways. I believe that this was her first foray into digital cinema as well, though she made so many films, and that's something I'll confess I did not look up, but she certainly is playing with the medium and some of the opportunities it affords you shooting digitally versus film. I'm curious, Josh, if this Varda film with her as a more active participant was rewarding for you.
Yeah, it was absolutely rewarding, especially in the context of the marathon we're doing. I think it's a film that's probably most valued by Varda diehards who really want to experience not only her work, but her as a person and her as almost an extra textual subject, you know, to set alongside the other work that she's done. It's not as dry as that sounds, though. I think this is very personal. It becomes quite personal as she makes that maybe somewhat obvious connection at the start that her career has always been a form of gleaning. You know, she has gone to pick up images and people in a lot of ways who others might not have noticed and preserve them in her film. So that's something that becomes clear fairly on. And then it becomes a little bit more of a consideration of how she does that, what catches her eye. She'll talk about this. She'll explain why she's filming a particular object. So all of those things do hold a level of interest. I think it's most compelling in the way that something like Camera Person, the Kirsten Johnson documentary that made my top 10 list last year, is, where it's very much a meta consideration of filmmaking, but becomes something that is also, as Johnson described that, a memoir. in a way. So
that's a great comparison. You're right.
Yes, I liked the film on that level. Here's the question that I would ask you, in addition to wanting to hear you know, your general reactions, but is it as interesting to see Varda film a series of multicolored cabbages and comment on the textures and the colors and explain a little bit why she's doing it and what attracts her? Is that as interesting as very similar detail shots we get in something like La Pointe Court of that fishing village, which are found objects as well that exist on their own out of context in a way, and we maybe bring more of our own associations to them? Not that that's a choice we have to make.
No,
you know,
it's a great question. I thought about La Pointe Court and some of those shots, and I certainly thought about Vagabond a lot, which is the last film we talked about in this marathon, and we see a lot of characters in this film who feel very much like the protagonists of that movie. They are related, I would say, in many ways. I think for me, all I can say is having that background of seeing those films, it made me appreciate more, I suppose, seeing this as an extension of those, seeing her now as the subject of the film as well, not just the person behind the camera, and still obviously very clearly being drawn to those images. Something about that within the whole context of her films, and she's made so many films, but just the five that we've seen so far, there was something that was very rewarding for me about that. And I think what I really hooked into here, Josh, was the notion that so much of life is about how you choose to frame the world. And of course, that the use of the word frame there by me is not by accident, because Varda obviously frames her world with the camera. And I think where it really clicked for me was in the conversation she has with the guy who picks up these large objects around his village. People set things out and he takes them to his place, and he is showing a map he has, and he describes it as if, see, the city even tells me where to go for this stuff. And Varda interjects and says, well, isn't it really a map that's showing where people can dump their stuff? And he says, well, yeah, but I use it for my purpose. So that's what the map means to me, right? That's how he frames that map. And there are other conversations that match that. Think about when we meet, after meeting a bunch of these gleaners, who, again, see themselves very much following in this tradition. They're not just beggars. This is something that historically people have done, that to them makes sense to do, because otherwise it's just waste.
Right.
And it is. I mean, the film very clearly shows how much food is thrown away, tons of potatoes that are perfectly edible.
How about the guy who dives in dumpsters?
Yeah.
Not because of financial reasons, but ethical,
on the principle.
Ethical reasons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we meet some of these characters, and then we meet some gypsies who turn their nose up at the gleaners. They segment themselves and they don't want to be lumped in with them. And there's another conversation where she's talking to a group that identify themselves as pickers. And they don't explicitly state their superiority, but it comes through. There seems to be this difference, as they explain it, in picking versus gleaning. And the difference is you pull down versus pulling from the ground, where you hunch down. And again, they don't say, so that makes us better than them. But I think it's very much implied that what they're doing by picking is somehow much more elegant.
The gleaners
and sophisticated.
Stoop over.
The gleaners have to stoop over. They're in the muck and the dirt, and they're not. So it's all about how these people choose to frame their lives. And then the logical next step of that is the film does very much become a self-portrait. It becomes a movie about a director who's making a film about her process as a filmmaker and how she frames the world. You said it. She is a gleaner with her camera of faces, of characters, of real people, of stories, of objects, very much. And there's a great scene where one character describes his work as involving anything that has sort of been discarded by society. And I think even in the films we've seen, she's explored those types of fringe people quite frequently. And there's a great scene with a guy who does say, I'd like to unburden myself of some of this clutter, some of these things that I have collected. But he describes it as stuff that belongs here. It's almost as if he's powerless to pick it up. And I was thinking about it, Josh. I think her corollary to that would be, as we see in the film, her then leaving and going off on her journey and seeing a barn or a shed that is marked finds on it, just stuff that's turned up that you can buy. And she finds randomly a painting that features gleaners. And it's a quite beautiful painting. And she says, no, this is truly random. We didn't stage this. But that idea of I had to collect this because it belongs here. I had to glean this because it belongs here. That feels to me as good a description of the artistic process as anything else. Talking about inspiration, I shot that because it wanted to be shot that way. I painted the house yellow because the house wanted to be painted yellow. There's just something implicit and inherent in these artists. And there's another one too, Josh, where we see that little drama that plays out between the homeless 20-somethings who vandalize the supermarket.
Yeah.
And she talks to them and the supermarket manager and the magistrate. And she describes them all as perfectly playing their parts, saying and looking exactly how they should look. And she even shot them with their dogs, precisely how we would expect them to be shot in that moment. So all of those layers really added up to something for me. And then you get the added layer of the digital cinematography. And I think how that factors in as well, because there's something about the wastefulness, or the waste, I should say, that digital allows you.
Yes,
that film does not.
That is exactly what I was thinking about with this. The digital camera work is, it would almost be a curse, you would think, for someone like Varda, who's just everywhere she looks, she sees something that has this inner need to be seen by others that most people wouldn't recognize until she puts it on camera in some way. So you've got to think, I mean, this is what, an hour and 20 minutes. It's a very concise film, something like that. But all of the footage that must have been tossed aside, which is something of an irony for a movie about gleaning. And in the context of her other work, it made me think, you know, with Vagabond fresh in our minds as well, Mona, the main character there, is something of a similar gleaner. I didn't necessarily see her as a Varda stand-in or figure until I saw this film. She travels from one town to the next, from one person to the next.
Yeah, meets, making fleeting connections.
Fleeting connections, gathering faces and stories that people sometimes tell their story to her. And so it's there's a through line between the two films there as well. You know, the digital camera work, you could say, limit some of the aesthetics that we've come to appreciate in Varda's other films because it is very grainy. You know, you can see the pixels, and there's some of that which works in some scenes, and others you wish for that more polished approach that Varda has in her other films. But she does manage, this goes back to your idea of framing, another painting she finds near the very end of the film, which is one that I think she actually seeks out, right? She had heard that this museum held it, but it wasn't on display. They find it in their archive, and she has the two curators bring it outside into the light.
I love those touches where she brings people into the element.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that she wants to see it in the sunlight.
Yes.
And it's an older painting of gleaners, the traditional early gleaners who did this in wheat fields, it looks like. And the idea of framing that frame within hers outside and having those two curators hold it on either side. It's a very unassuming but deeply poetic and moving image to close the film on.
Yeah.
And I think that's because what we've come to learn is if we had walked by, maybe we had just seen two curators with a holding a painting outside and not thought much about it. Oh, that's an interesting painting. But at this point, we know what the search has meant to Varda, what she sees in that painting now, and the value that she sees in it. So it connects to the whole personal element of this movie. There's an underlying thread here too, which she only – maybe you picked up more of it than I did, but a couple of times her hands –
Oh, I wanted to get into this. Yeah, that's the next thing I wanted to talk about.
And man, it's – I'm glad she kind of left it where she did, but you're also very curious what her other thoughts were on this because the word she uses is the horror of my hands. And it's almost in her voice, you can tell she's uncomfortable talking about it more, but that artist in her recognizes this needs to be in the film. And she's referring to the aging, you know, of her hands. And she'll make a few comments, but it's almost on the way to the next image. But there's enough of the confessional artist in her to leave that in the finished film.
Yeah. Even with all that is cast aside, you said what she has to waste in only making an 80-minute film. she still manages to include a lot of these wonderfully playful non sequiturs. And I do love the bit, actually, where she leaves the camera on when she pointed it down, and we get, I think, as she calls it, the dance of the lens cap.
Dance of the lens cap,
which,
right.
You know, is not necessarily riveting cinema, but what it does underscore is that can only happen, really, because of that digital technology. That's her acknowledging that because you can just point that camera down at the ground and it will keep running, unlike a film camera where you would just hope you would never make that mistake because the film is too precious, but also you'd be aware that it's running. You would hear it running. She accidentally shoots it, but then she doesn't waste it. She puts it in the film.
Right.
Like the Gleaners, they make use of, she makes use of what other people would normally cast off. So this film has still a lot of scraps in it. Not that they feel in any way unnecessary. They feel kind of vital to this film. And I think it is very moving when she shoots her hand with the camera in the other, which she acknowledges. I think, again, that's her acknowledging that this particular camera allows me to do that in a way a more traditional cinematic approach wouldn't let you do.
And doesn't she describe it as both fantastic and narcissistic?
Yeah,
I think so. Interesting observation.
Yeah, but even that whole bit with the hands, it underscores an idea of impermanence that I think pervades the movie, this idea that everything happens in cycles, that nature will ultimately run its course. It can't be stopped. The grapes and the apples can be plucked and they can be salvaged, but they will eventually rot. And somehow it just got me thinking about this notion of cinema and its real aim, maybe for some artists anyway, being to stave off that impermanence. And I love that Varda seems like one of those filmmakers who relishes film's ability to capture moments that will hopefully live on forever in some people's minds, even if the images themselves don't actually live on forever. At the same time, she's fully willing to embrace as well the impermanence of her own body,
right. Yeah,
and her own mortality.
I think that's a distinction here. She's willing to look it right in the eye, and also leave it in the film. I think there's some really delicate editing going on here that makes this very interesting too, because we have various images of gleaners that we definitely move from one to the other, whether it's these, what would they be, 18th century paintings, maybe not that old. And then all of a sudden we'll get
19th maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we'll get stock footage of gleaners from, say, the 1920s or something like that. And then we'll go right into these interviews she's doing with modern day gleaners. And the sense of tradition is just delicately carried through in this editing scheme.
It really is. And I suppose in some way, the final point I wanted to make about this film and Varda seems like it would be capping off this marathon. It might be more appropriate for an end sentiment after we get to the final film in the marathon, which is The Beaches of Agnes. But what really hit me here, Josh, was that her genius, I think, and there are a lot of elements to Varda that single her out as a true genius of cinema. But if it had to be one thing that I put my finger on, I think it would be that she exudes this fascination with outsiders, with these people on the fringes, as we mentioned, of society, but without any hint of exploitation at all, which I think is pretty amazing that she pulls that off. But there's something about Varda the filmmaker and Varda the person, whether she's in front of the camera or behind the camera, that just shows her to be too generous a spirit, too curious, too naturally empathetic. And that makes sense because what this movie shows us, again, being a self-portrait, a memoir, if you will, is she is one of them after all. That's how she does see herself. So, of course, she would be naturally empathetic and generous to these people and relate to these people. And I just don't think you would get that necessarily with other filmmakers who still might make a great film about these people, but they might also make you feel a little bad about it or a little bit creepy almost in the way that the camera spies these people and maybe enjoys a little bit too much their degradation That never comes through with a Varda film.
Well, and there's a flip side to that too. There's no exploitation and there's no judgment. So
yep.
You see that. I think we especially start to detect this in something like One Sings, the Other Doesn't with mm-hmm. those two characters. But absolutely in Vagabond is where it's at its full force, which is a really nice pairing with mm-hmm. this film, I think.
Yeah,
with the Gleaners
it for sure
it.
Is. I think if you were going to start with Varda, even though – this comes much later in her career, and as we're saying, it's a bit of a look back and a self-portrait. I would still say that you could pair Vagabond and this and have a pretty good idea of who Agnes Varda is as a director. We do have one more film to get to, though, another documentary, another very personal film. It has her name in the title, after all, The Beaches of Agnes. I want to say this is a 2008 film, so a fairly recent film from Varda, one of the rare marathon subjects, Josh, who is still alive. Who
yeah,
we could maybe even
true.
Get on the show at some point.
Imagine that.
Maybe. We can dream. If you have any thoughts on The Gleaners and I or about Agnes Varda, we would love to hear your feedback. Our email is feedback@filmspotting.net. Film Spotting is listener supported. Join the Film Spotting family at filmspottingfamily.com and get access to ad-free episodes, monthly bonus shows, our weekly newsletter, and for the first time, all in one place, the entire Film Spotting archive going back to 2005. That's at filmspottingfamily.com.